What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardwar, this week joined by podcast producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. We're going to be talking about NVIDIA's DLSS 5, which has caused an uproar in the online gaming community. So we've got a special guest on for that. And yeah, we'll talk about the state of Xbox, and we've got a bunch of news to dive into, too. But as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. We also do live streams Thursday mornings, typically at 10:30 a.m. Eastern, although this morning it's a little early. It really moves around depending on the guests sometimes. So just tune in, keep an eye on our YouTube channel if you want to see us on the live stream. And yeah, once again, drop us emails. We've got our listener question we'll be diving into this week. So stay tuned for all of that. Let's get to NVIDIA's DLSS 5, which has been a really fascinating thing to see the audience respond to online. And joining us to talk about that is Anshul Sag, a VP and Principal Analyst at More Insights and Strategies. Hey, Anshul, how's it going?
Pretty good. The show is over for me, so I'm you know, a little bit more chill. I had a decent night's sleep last night. But yeah, it's DLSS has definitely been a big talk of all the things that have been announced here.
Yeah, it's totally wild. And for the live stream, Anshul is coming to us from a 5G connection because hotels. So just, you know, whatever happens with the live stream connection, just sit tight, folks. But let's talk about DLSS 5 because this kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't really expect NVIDIA to be even announcing something like this at GTC. DLSS 4.5, the most recent version that they talked about, I don't think isn't fully rolled out yet. They announced that that's coming in April. That one is going to bring dynamic frame generation. So it's going to like move the frame generation depending on what your system needs. And that even that seemed like a big leap. But for DLSS 5, NVIDIA unveiled this technology, which they're saying it's a neural network mapping at the pixel level to deliver photorealistic lighting and materials to games. So we saw a couple examples of this. The most notorious one is Grace from Resident Evil Requiem. We see a filter of her before, which I believe is the path-traced, ray-traced version of her, which looks like a typical 3D character, really highly detailed. And then they flip on DLSS 5, and all of a sudden she has a lot more detail around her face, but also what looks like makeup, what looks like mascara. It looks like a yassified version of Grace. And that was the first thing when Jensen Huang was showing it off. That was the first thing everybody saw. That was what people were seeing online. And I think the immediate response was like, no, what is going on here? We also see a version of Leon in DLSS 5, and he just has more detail around his face. There are other versions too. There's stuff from Starfield, the Harry Potter game, and it adds detail to people's faces, which looks like it looks like a completely different model or a completely different person. Anshul, you were there for the announcement. You also saw a bunch of demos in person. How do you feel about this version of DLSS?
I would say that, like, I totally understand where people are coming from. If all that they've seen were, like, those first two images, which I think is probably 80% of people, I had the opportunity to see this demo kind of right after the keynote. So I didn't know what my meeting was. They put a meeting on my calendar after the keynote. I had no idea what it was going to be. I was also surprised by DLSS 5 because, to your point, 4.5 wasn't even fully out there yet. Why would they announce 5? And on top of that, you know, there really wasn't any need for it because I think 4.5, a lot of people were impressed with what they were doing already. So it was just like, I got the demo. I sat there for like a good half hour to an hour. I don't remember how long anymore now. And I would say that, like, it definitely feels like it's not finished, first and foremost. You know, when I was asking for details on things, they're like, it's not done yet. We're not ready yet. In the fall, we'll give you more details. So, you know, I think a lot of people pointed out it's running on 250 90s right now. So it's really not commercially viable yet. But also, some of the demos I saw were really jarring in terms of the before and after. But then if you like really looked at it closely and went back and forth and back and forth, you notice that like really what happened is the character model was not developed with this technology in place. So some of the mistakes or some of the choices that the designers made don't really fit for this technology. And as a result, they look weird or they look wrong. But then some other models, you look at them, you're like, oh, actually, I see it. Like, this is just relit much better. And the ones that are done well, they look way more photorealistic, which, you know, something that my friends and I have talked about is like, that's kind of been the goal since we've been playing video games and asking for better and better image quality, is we've been asking for photorealism. So that's kind of been the North Star for a lot of this. So when they deliver that photorealism, sometimes it's such a big leap that it feels unnatural. And I think that combined with people's perception of AI right now, especially in gaming, I think that's kind of forced some of these very emotional reactions. Some of them are valid based on like what the actual, you know, final result looks like compared to what the original is. But truthfully, the whole body of work, I see what they're trying to do, and it actually does make a lot of sense. I think the important part here is that none of these games are developed with this technology in mind. So I think when we get a game that launches with DLSS 5 fundamentally baked into the game, I think it will look very different. And I also think it's important for a lot of people to remember DLSS is not on by default. It is a feature you can choose to include and enable to get more frames from a game. And you don't have to have it. So the game doesn't need to look like that if you don't want it to. And not to mention, you know, there's different dials you can play with here. And that's another thing I asked was like, you know, are there certain features that will change based on your DLSS settings? And they said, yes, but we don't know what those look like yet. So I just think that like, this was a very early launch because they don't usually talk about these kinds of things like DLSS so early. They usually launch them, you know, or announce them weeks before they launch. This is, you know, probably 8 months before it launches. So I think we're in a place where I think they may have announced it too early. I think their communication wasn't that great, but I think the response was overwhelmingly negative. And I think not with enough validity.
Yeah, I kind of the immediate response to this, I was thinking of the Fallout 4 meme. Everyone disliked that. You know, NVIDIA's excited about it. Jensen Huang's excited about it. They say some studio heads are excited about it, too. And I can kind of see why, because technically, it's sort of like the promise of AI that Hollywood studios are looking at, too. It's like, oh, you mean you can make my thing look better with less work on my end with a bit of AI post-processing? That's great for me. That's great for my bottom line. It was interesting to see the immediate gamer response to be like, no, thank you. And that does tie into like the general sentiment towards AI right now and, you know, AI generated video. So I'm not too surprised by it. And maybe people can be going a bit overboard because I do think some of the environmental lighting that we see here, they showed some Assassin's Creed shadows. That looks like it could be interesting. That looks like it could be good. But I also really think NVIDIA's totally like overplaying what this is or overstating what it is, because the press release for this in Jensen's announcement is like, this is the greatest, upgrade in computer graphics since we launched real-time ray tracing in 2018. And that was with the RTX 2000 cards. And even then, that I remember that demo. I was there for that launch event. And they, around then, 2018 or 2019, there was the ILMX Lab video that showed the Stormtrooper video being rendered in real time. Mm-hmm. And it was Stormtroopers with like the lighting and reflections going down an elevator. That looked impressive because we had never seen anything like that before done in real time. It looked like a Pixar thing. And we all thought like, oh, that, you mean I could do that at home on my video card? That's incredible. I don't know if this particular edition, it is a big leap over like where we are now. First of all, not many people have like the highest end graphics to have really playable path traced ray tracing. You have to have, you could do it on a 5070, but ideally a 5080 or 5090 to get that going, unless you're playing at a lower resolution. But it's not something many people have access to. And if you do have access to, that already looks really good and pretty realistic lighting wise. I don't see the big visual leap that they think that they're getting here from DLSS 5. So from your conversations with people, Anshul, like what is the excitement in NVIDIA? Do they just think like, you know, they've been working on this for a while and they thought people would like additional graphic niceties that maybe aren't that different from path-traced ray tracing?
I think that they seem very excited about it. I think they want this to be something that people enable and specifically game developers want to include in their games. Because again, this is one of those features, like if the game developer doesn't support it, it's not happening. You know, there are some ways to force it in their driver that they've kind of enabled recently. If the game developer doesn't enable it. But in general, I'd say like they were very positive. I think really the message I was getting from them was, this is very early. This is earlier than we've ever shown it. And that was before the backlash, because the backlash, you know, still was building in the moment when I was getting the demo. But I really got to say, like, I think this will be seen as something that's very big in the future, because if you look at the market, neural rendering is going to be the future for pretty much every single GPU moving forward. And NVIDIA has kind of been the leader in enabling new features in graphics almost every single generation. You know, they were the first to do like ray tracing in the GPU and not requiring dedicated hardware. And, you know, they kind of moved the industry forward on super sampling as well. Specifically AI enhanced super sampling. So I just think that this is going to be another thing where NVIDIA is going to probably take a little bit of hurt for the way this launched. But I think in the fall, when they have it much more baked, I think that people will be much happier with this. I also think people might forget, because it was 8 months later. You know, people will probably go back and be like, oh, there was some backlash. Well, now actually, you know, NVIDIA has put more resources behind it, and, you know, they've made sure that like the tuning looks a lot more like it should. And, you know, they're going to probably have some games launch with this fairly soon, close to the actual launch of the feature. And I think those games will most likely look very good. And, you know, again, the developers are going to be the ones who determine really how this gets rolled out. And I hope that this isn't something that's going to be stuck with only the highest end gamers, because generally speaking, DLSS has been a very positive feature that people turn on, and they get free frames from it. And in general, it does enable a smoother, more enjoyable game experience.
Yeah, it's I mean, I remember when DLSS launched in general too, everyone was like, wait, so you're rendering a game, this is like DLSS 1 and 2, you're rendering a game at a lower resolution and you're using machine learning to show us what it could look like at a high resolution? That seems weird. That seems like some dark magic. And I remember the initial response was like, ugh. And then as people got used to it and as it got better, I think people just kind of lived with it. And by the time we got to DLSS 3, that was when they introduced frame generation. So then there's a whole idea of like, oh, you're just magically increasing frame rates. How is that working? And again, there was initial pushback to that, just because the idea of it sounded kind of wonky.
Fake frames.
Yeah, fake frames. And there is kind of a point to that. By the point you get to like 4x frame generation, it's like, okay, you're going overboard. You're going a little crazy. And that does affect the sort of like latency and lag that you feel when you're playing a game. But also, there's a good balance now. If you do like 2x frame generation in 4K, and you're also getting DLSS upscaling there too, all of a sudden the idea of playing a game in 4K, even if it's not natively being rendered in 4K, is a lot more possible on other hardware. So yeah, if you have a 5070, if you have a 4070, honestly, or even some of the 30 gen cards, like you can get decent performance thanks to DLSS. But again, even the ray tracing aspect of that took a while to trickle down to consumers, right? Because both the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X they have ray tracing, but only if you enable the sort of like quality graphics mode in some games and live with 30 FPS. And that was just not doable for most people. It took until the PlayStation 5 Pro came out for that to really hit console gamers, but then you're spending $700 on the console, which again, out of reach for a lot of people. You mentioned, Anshul, that yeah, not everybody needs to turn this on. You could just live without it. It doesn't really affect anything. I think the worry people have is sort of like the downstream effect over time with this. If NVIDIA is selling this as DLSS 5, this is kind of the vision of what they want for the future of computing. I think people are worried about that. And I think that's a real concern a little bit there.
So I was looking around on Reddit for what the response among gamers was. And Anshul, I'd like you to respond to this one comment that I've seen a few times. I mean, the general sentiment, but like I'll read the actual comment from a Reddit user named OxBuddy. They say, while you're wondering how could they possibly think this is a good idea to show this, every game studio CEO is licking their lips at the prospective cost savings of firing half of their asset teams. NVIDIA is offering to outsource more than 25%, I think that's a high estimate, but more than 25% of their development costs to the user's hardware within the next several years. This was shown, what, a couple of days ago? I bet there are already thousands of pages of serious planning being written at the highest levels of the industry. Like it or not, you're going to play a game utilizing this technology in less than 10 years at the absolute most. What would you say to gamers who really care about the overall health of the industry and the people working in it as well?
Yeah, I think that's always a valid concern whenever new technology that makes something easier is implemented. I do think that there's still going to be people who have to implement the technology, tune it, make sure that it runs smoothly. There's still going to be a lot of people that have to be involved with the implementation of this technology. And I think fundamentally, there is a move towards neural rendering, regardless of whether or not NVIDIA will launch it. So I think this is a direction that the entire industry has been planning on moving for a while. I've seen these architectures in place for quite some time. So I think it's really like, it's possible that we've already seen the game industry account for this. And I think that, you know, we are in a pretty dire place for the game industry, but I also think a lot of that has to do with consolidation. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the industry over investing when there was boom times, and we haven't really like fully come to terms with that yet. So I think there is some validity here, but I also think like, I have yet to talk to a game developer that says that this is going to cause them to lose their job. And I think, you know, obviously having the game developer executives be the ones who talk about this is a little bit unfortunate in terms of like the audience, but I think we should definitely hear more from actual game developers who would implement this. And like, what about the indies, right? Like, what if this makes indie games better, right? I think that's a flip side of this is, indie game developers can implement this fairly simply and easily and enhance their game and get it to market faster, which could create more competition and make better games cheaper and be able to have more people buy more games, which is also a positive thing for the industry.
It feels like this is the eternal debate we keep having, right? Like there is that flip side to AI generation in general, right? It could make indie film directors, make it more viable for them to produce scenes and get their ideas out there. But I think I can't help but think of like the market realities of this, right? Like when Todd Howard and the executives are like, yes, this is great. That hits a little different than if the designers and artists who actually built those models and built those worlds were responding to how this technology is changing their work. So to me, like that's I'm not hearing from the artists. I'm not hearing from the people who designed Grace or the actress who she was initially modeled on too. And the whole Grace thing is kind of interesting because that scene, if you guys haven't played Resident Evil Requiem, the scene that is taken from is the very beginning of the game where Grace is a terrified, inexperienced FBI agent who's going to the hotel where her mother was murdered. Like she is not preparing for a night out. She has no makeup. She is she is not in a good place.
Yeah.
So to yassify that version of that character, like, she's not in makeup to go explore this murder, like to explore like what's happening here at a place that traumatized her. She is a person dealing with PTSD. So that's also what I'm thinking about when it comes to artistic intent. Like, I think overall this stuff was demoed too early. They didn't really think about the sort of like public reaction to these things. I am kind of worried about the homogenization of the look of some games or the look of models. And I think the ultimate thing, the thing we see here is kind of what we see with AI video and AI pictures. When stuff affects human faces, people notice that. People recognize that. And they can sense the uncanniness of it. They can clock some of the weirdness of it. And I also wonder if, like, the goal for true photorealism is something... That's not something we'll want for every game. We don't want that for Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, yeah. I was literally just about to say that. Like, the idea that photorealism is the goal is, I don't know, that feels like an idea stuck in 2008 or something, because that was also before, like, the big blooming of the indie developers, and you would just see how much artistic leeway people had. You know, you have the ability to make a game look like whatever you want, and you want it to look like real life. I've seen real life.
Yeah. It's fine. It's totally fine. Anshul, I know you're in a rush to the airport soon. So any final words on this? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I really think that the way this was launched just did not land. I think if everybody was able to see the demos, I think they would have a much different opinion. Some people might not, but I think a lot of other people will. I think, to your point, the environmental lighting thing really hit much stronger, I think, than the facial lighting did. But also, you know, I'm a photographer, you know, I've messed around with lighting in games a lot. And to me, it mostly seems like lighting. But, you know, when you light things that weren't intended to be lit sometimes, they really do change quite a bit. And I think that's I think what has hit people the hardest. And I think that in 8 months or whatever this ends up actually launching, I think people's opinions will be different. Some people's opinions will be unchanged, but in general, I think I agree with you that this was way too early. And this is very un-NVIDIA of them. So I think they got a little too excited, a little bit ahead of their skids here. And I think that's part of what happened here.
It is funny. Executives just get overexcited about AI. And they're like, everyone's going to love this. Everybody wants to see Windows Recall or whatever Copilot feature we have. And turns out regular people aren't always as excited as they are. Thank you so much, Anshul. Where can people find you on the internet these days?
I am everywhere. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Threads. I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok, all Anshul Sog and all of those platforms. Thankfully, I have a unique enough name that I own all those tags.
Yes, I know how that is. Yeah, keep your unique name identifier going. Check out Anshul's stuff, and thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
A couple of final thoughts on this topic. It is really funny to see Digital Foundry, normally a really trusted brand when it comes to talking about game graphics and things like that. They initially released a very positive video about DLSS 5 after it was released. Like, they were pretty positive. And then, again, immediate criticism from their audience, thinking they were paid by NVIDIA for this thing. They've even come back and said that maybe they shouldn't have released it so early because they were kind of in the afterglow of seeing a demo. And I know how that is. I know how it is to see something that kind of blows your mind a little and feels brand new. And then you come off of that high and you immediately, like, respond to it. It's easy to be a little overly impressed. Like, that's happened to me, happens to everybody. And you also don't get to check the temperature of how people are responding to this thing. Like, how are artists thinking about it? How are developers actually thinking about it? How are the people who are going to be using this technology thinking about it? So I think it's kind of a fair problem that they're dealing with. Digital Foundry also released, like, a very long, hour-long session, like a talk about it, a little more in-depth, and also from one of their members who's more critical of DLSS 5 and is very much not sold on it in the way that their initial video was. So go check out that stuff. I think it's really interesting to have that conversation. And Ben, you want to point to some stuff online too, right?
Yeah, just another example of folks responding to this. This is a person who works in post-production. Her name is Ashley Lynch. She's an editor and colorist and, like, works in the film industry. And she is talking about just the weird kind of, like, sexism that comes up whenever you talk about like female faces in games, and it's like, why aren't they hot enough? Because Devendra, you should scroll down to the one with Aloy right below. I think that's the one that really sticks out, because Aloy has been like a lightning rod. This is Aloy from the Horizon series, has been a lightning rod for people saying she's not whatever enough for a long time. Remember a few years ago when I think Forbidden West had just come out, or they had, you know, published some teaser images for Forbidden West, and they wanted to show off how good the graphics were. Going back to what Anshul said, how close to photorealistic they were getting in terms of the graphics. And all people could say was, ew, Peach Fuzz. She's got little hairs coming out of her face. Guess what? She's a mammal.
Yeah, tell us you've never seen a somebody else in person, basically. Another human, not just a woman, like anybody. Everybody's got a little peach fuzz. That's how it works. That's how we work.
And then connect this idea with Grace, you know, not having a good time. Ashley is saying, like, this is really just going in the direction of some of the worst sentiment online, because I've seen a number of fan edits of Aloy, and the one that we're looking at right now is on the left is, you know, the actual in-game image.
I don't even think that's the actual right. That's not the actual in-game Aloy. They definitely did something to
They do something? Okay, well,
it looks like a worse version of Aloy, and then lists like, you know, yassified model Aloy. Basically.
Yes. That yeah. Was like literally yeah. Like a TikTok or Snapchat filter of like light makeup, you know, like freckles, whatever it is. Like that isn't accurate to Aloy's character or the entire world of the Horizon series. Like they live in a weird world where sometimes there are outhouses and sometimes there are giant mechanical beasts. So, like, it's not like you have perfect shower facilities. It's just really frustrating. And the idea that now we can automate this and automate it more in the direction of some of the, like, worst impulses of fans rather than the artists who make these games is... feels ominous, but again, like Anshul said, this is a early demo of the technology. We don't know what it's going to look like at the very end, but...
I just have to say, folks, yeah, when we talk about AI stuff and we talk about, hey, please share your disgust. If you do not like something, please say it loudly. Think of the Sonic model we'd be living with in those movies if fans were like, yes, we're okay with this ugly tooth Sonic. Sometimes it's often overreaction, like the crowd impulse is not always great. But when it comes to things like AI, it really does help to say you do not like something, because that is the power we have as an audience. And I think these companies should be aware, like NVIDIA is one of the, I believe, is the biggest company in the world right now, or at least one of the most valuable, because of AI, because they placed this big bet on GPUs a long time ago and parallel processing. It's a whole wide story. Because of video games, AI and NVIDIA was in a good place for AI processing with their GPUs.
I mean, because of video games, they were in good place for crypto. And then when people were really trying to like build the biggest possible crypto rigs, we also were like, oh, okay, so like let's try AI on this stuff. And
we could do all sorts of stuff. It is funny, like all the people that tried to sell me on like their random crypto scams years ago are really quiet right now. And some people that I kind of respected, like big designers in Silicon Valley, were like, oh, yeah, I've got this crypto thing. I've got a Web 3.0 thing going. And they would talk down at me about how, like, I was just not seeing the vision here. Where is that stuff now? AI is not the same level of a scam as crypto, because a lot of it is happening and is making its way into products. But I do think the response to it, like we did to NFTs, and other Web 3.0 stuff, like in Engadget, we just didn't cover NFTs because we're like, these are
you
fucking
can
JPEGs.
Make fun of things yes. to death if you yes. want to.
You can make your disgust note, or just like The Simpsons say, just don't look.
Don't bully people to death, but you can bully concepts that you don't like to death.
Absolutely.
And I mean, this is used for good and for bad, because I mean, what is Gamergate but people kind of bullying concepts?
It's totally Gamergate. Like, it's the Mass Effect 3 ending that was changed because of a fan response. So more often this is used badly, but I also think, hey, if you really don't like something and you see the industry trending in a way, say something, because you do, especially online, you have a voice. You do have a voice. So anyway.
So, Devendra, you also wanted to talk about Project Helix, Xbox's Project Helix, right?
I did, because we missed, I mean, this news happened last week and there was just so much going on that we didn't talk about it. But last week at GDC, which is a separate event, God, I hate this. I hate that NVIDIA purposefully called their thing GTC and it's the week after GDC. I hate it all. But at GDC last week, Microsoft gave us more details around what this next generation Xbox console is going to be like. They're still calling it a console. They confirmed the code name is Project Helix a while ago. And we got some additional details from Jason Ronald, Vice President of Next Generation Xbox. Somebody was like trying to stream the presentation to, wouldn't allow it. It's very strange. This was a closed-door GDC event where people could talk about what was discussed there, but you couldn't see the stream or anything. But basically, Microsoft is saying, yes, it can play PC and console games. It's also going to be using AMD's next-generation chip and also using their... AMD has their DLSS alternative, and it's going to be that thing. I do wonder. Like, the question is, like, does anybody care about Xbox hardware right now? And really, the only thing Microsoft can do is be like, hey, this is a powerful box and it can play PC games. And I hope they're not stupid about how that's implemented, right? Like, they should allow for the Steam storefront. They should allow for all the other storefronts where people have games. If you have games on GOG, if you have games downloaded from all over, I keep saying this. If Valve can figure out how to emulate Windows games better than some PCs can play Windows games, that is a problem. You are Microsoft. You should be able to try to fix this. So Xbox is not in a great state. You know, like, I don't think they have much brand equity right now. But I think that initial reaction to the Steam machine from Valve is a sign that people would be down with something like this. People would be down with a box that sits by their TV that can play some PC games. And if that's a thing they can do that Sony can't and that Nintendo can't, that's your way in, Microsoft. That's your way to sell a different vision of computing. And also, this week or last week? Last week, they officially killed the This Is an Xbox marketing campaign. I think our post was, I guess this wasn't an Xbox. It really wasn't. It really, your phone, your computer, all the other stuff was not an Xbox. There's also the Xbox mode that's going to be coming to Windows, all Windows 11 computers. That's like a full screen mode that's on the Asus ROG, and that's going to just give you like a more focused interface for gaming. We'll see if that makes much of a difference, but I keep looking at this stuff and being like, it is the year 2026. You knew you were in the losing place in the console market in 2020 and in the lead up to the Xbox Series X and S. This should have all been the thing. This should have been the thing they were betting on from the beginning. So we'll see if anybody cares by 2027. That's when they expect developers to be getting some hardware, the dev kits. And that means maybe by the end of 2027, the actual consoles could be reaching consumers. Maybe it could be 2028. Again, there were reported delays around the PlayStation 6 as well, like the next PlayStation. This all seems like it's coming soon, but folks, it has been 6 years since the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and S were launched. So this is the timeline of a console launch. It may be a little delayed because of the RAM shortage and component shortage and all that stuff. So I guess we'll see. Yeah.
That's actually a perfect segue to one more Reddit comment on DLSS stuff that I found, which is someone who said, can't wait to not play these games on the PC I can't afford now because this technology exists.
Because these games exist. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but it's not because these games exist. It's because like so much development has gone into AI things like DLSS 5, right?
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what's great? Anshul brought this up. Indie games. Indie games from developers, and they don't have to have perfect graphics. They don't have to have photorealism. I love stylized graphics. I grew up on Nintendo games, and Nintendo's still kicking butt with that, you know, on the Switch 2. It is really funny how the Switch 2 is just out there selling like hotcakes, and Nintendo's like, screw this noise. Like, we don't have to deal with any of this stuff. You guys have your photorealistic fight. We will slowly add more power to our print money machine over here. Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's end this segment on a bit of a lighter note on DLSS 5. I really want to see how actual human artists can bend this to their will. Make this a tool instead of something where you only have to half make a character model and then just be like, okay, well, whatever. Like, DLSS is going to take care of the rest of it.
And it should be clear, NVIDIA says, like, developers will have some controls over how DLSS 5 is implemented. We don't really know exactly what that's going to look like. My main worry is that it is people going to be doing stuff like, yeah, producing a low-rent model or shipping out development to, like, other countries where they will produce graphics really cheaply. Like, this is what happens. The executives and the studio heads will want to save money as much as possible. So yeah, create low poly renders and then have DLSS 5 do all the work. I think that's kind of where a lot of things are going to go if people really overinvest in this technology. So we'll see. There's still a lot we need to know. I've not seen DLSS 5 in person myself. I kind of wish I was at GTC for this whole thing. But check out the Digital Foundry coverage, especially their like Make Good video where they have a good discussion about it all. And yeah, check out Anshul's coverage too. He's all over the place. I saw his TikTok, so that's how I knew he was there. Let's move on to some other news. And hey, we saw that the Arizona Attorney General is suing Kalshi on illegal gambling charges. Almost like we had this discussion about how these prediction markets are kind of just betting. It's just betting, and maybe something should be done about it. Let me see here. The state's Attorney General, Chris Mays, said Kalshi may brand itself as a, quote, prediction market, but what it's actually doing is running an illegal gambling operation, taking bets on Arizona elections, both of which violate Arizona law, end quote. Yeah. Yes. Everyone should be saying this. More states should be saying this. We should not normalize what these things are doing. Like, we have some stories related to Kalshi and Polymarket right now. You want to bring this up, Ben, right?
Yeah. So again, like, the entire thing about like Arizona suing Kalshi is this is just like the beginning of a much longer story. And as I've been saying for several weeks in a row now, I think the biggest like boon to news people and news consumers is that now there's going to be a bunch of legal discovery, and eventually you're going to be able to read like internal emails at Kalshi of what people were saying about like certain bets. And that's going to be very interesting. But I want to focus on how a bunch of gamblers have been emailing this reporter at the Times of Israel, threatening his life if he didn't rewrite an Iran missile story. This is centered on the Times of Israel's military reporter, Emmanuel Fabian. So he interfaces with the IDF to report on what they're doing in Gaza and the West Bank and Lebanon, and most recently, everything happening after the U.S. and Israel started a now regional war with Iran. Because of this, Iran has also launched missiles at Israel. And of course, people have also been betting on it on the prediction markets. So he said, like, okay, so a missile fell in this area, and no one was hurt, thankfully. It was in an open area. There was an explosion. You should know about it, but it was overall, like, no big deal. We'll need to clean it up, and everybody be careful. Then he gets an email saying, regarding your Times of Israel report that described today's launch as an impact, the municipality later corrected their response to clarify what fell was an interceptor fragment, not a full missile, the email claimed. The reporter was like, no, I talked to the IDF and they said it was a missile. He like didn't understand why he got several more emails saying, correct this, to be an interceptor. Correct this to be an interceptor. It wasn't a missile. As if they knew what was happening better than the military defending this country. It turns out that there was a bet on whether or not Israel, just the entire country of Israel, was going to be hit with a missile from Iran on March 10th. And the rules of the bet state, this market shall resolve to yes if Iran initiates a drone, missile, or airstrike on Israel's soil on the listed date, like in Israel time. Otherwise, this market will resolve to no. However, big clause here, missiles or drones that are intercepted will not be a sufficient for a yes resolution, regardless of whether they land in Israeli territory or cause damage. So if you have a Iranian missile that gets intercepted and, you know, fragments burst apart and someone is injured by a fragment, or, you know, one of the fragments like falls on a farm or something and kills a goat, that is more damage, more pain for real life people, but then another bunch of people make money in one way or the other. And so the people who were harassing this reporter were all betting that Israel would not be hit by a missile on that day. And it only got worse after that. He was getting emails and WhatsApp messages saying stuff like, if you do not correct this by 1 o'clock Israel time today, March 15th, you are bringing upon yourself damage you have never imagined you would suffer, he threatened in a very lengthy message. There was also another thing that said, I am requesting a response from you now in the next 10 minutes. We offered you to end this quietly with profit in your pocket and everything disappears, but it seems you think you can stall for time. People had $900,000 cumulatively riding on this bet, and they were looking for like a resolution to go in their direction. This sucks a lot. Of course, the reporter, Emmanuel, was tweeting through this saying, hey guys, this is really weird. Like, and of course, bringing this to X is much more effective than, you know, posting on Instagram or especially Blue Sky, because this is where I think a lot of these folks tend to hang out. Polymarket sees this and issues their response, just condemning it, saying like, stop threatening this guy. This sucks.
Who would create the situation where a reporter was threatened for reporting reality? Let's stop those folks.
Yeah, it's hot dog costume situation.
And hey, they're opening a bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah,
I'm also like really not sure until I see permits issued in DC bureaucracy saying Polymarket is actually opening a bar. I don't know whether or not to believe this, but Polymarket did say
this is such a DC story, by the way, too. Like every city gets the bars they deserve. And being having drinks at a thing where news is projected on like walls and like a 3D globe, such a DC problems, it seems like there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're looking at it on the live stream right now.
Imagine a sports bar, but just for situation monitoring. Live X feeds, flight radar, Bloomberg terminals, and Polymarket screens. Grand opening is this Friday.
And I also don't know whether or not this is going to be something that is just like a pop-up or anything. But
you
like,
they could have rented out a bar and like retrofitted it for a weekend or something. Like
yeah, it's screens. Yeah, and I mean, like also garbage, like yeah. They are promising things that they cannot deliver, because these images that we're looking at right now are so very obviously AI generated.
You mean they can't get a holographic globe in the middle of
I don't
the
think it's necessarily a holographic globe. I think that it's, you know, like a yeah. children's museum, like internally lit globe. But still, like, it's not going to look as good, because that's not a real image. That's definitely not a picture of something that exists in real life. Yeah. On top of the fact that a few pictures later, they depict, you know, a highball glass and like a smoldering cigar. And like, that's fun to think about, but smoking has been illegal in most public places around the country, not just DC, for decades. So somebody just was like, it's vibey, let's do it.
It's vibey, but it's all, we're Polymarket. We don't follow rules or local laws. We just go. This is the vibe we're going for over here. Sick sad world. That's what we're living in. Let's talk about something that's less sick, less sad. Apple announced the AirPods Max 2.
We're just getting a little break until we go into sicker, sadder world. Yeah. But let's talk about AirPods.
Let's take a breather. The gadget breather, everybody. AirPods Max 2. They're coming with the H2 chip. Freaking finally. I will tell you, folks, these headphones do not make sense. Especially when you could get Sony's great WH-1000 XM series phones for like $300 or less, especially if you get them refurbished or something, which have great ANC and great sound quality. But I have had this weird urge to get AirPods Max for the past couple of years. I'm just like looking for sales, looking at my credit card points and being like, I should do this.
Can I cash these down to like actual money and then just get AirPods for free or no?
It's basically business cat sitting reading a newspaper at the table. It's like, I should get the AirPods Max. Yes, that's kind of how I feel sometimes. But now I was always like, that has the old tech. Surely they're going to update these at some point. They're still $549.
They have.
They're still $549. I don't think I'll ever spend over $400 for headphones, no matter how good they sound. And they didn't fundamentally change the design or anything. And people still complain that they are heavy and maybe uncomfortable at times. But also, that when you're in the middle of the day and working, and like the way you can flip AirPods between different things, like from your phone to your computer to whatever, it is such a great thing. Like, not to juggle Bluetooth pairing or whatever, like, as you're working. Like, it's very seamless. So that is why I'm feeling the pull to these things. I don't know. Let us know what you think. I wish they fixed the design a little bit here.
I'd also really love to just go to some kind of listening room and try AirPods Max head-to-head with the classic Sony WH-1000s.
You could probably do that. Like, you live in New York where there are audiophile things. You could probably find a place to do that somehow.
Okay, what I want to do is, like, go to not just a dead silent listening room. I want to go to, like, some place that has, like, a simulator for an airplane, or, like, some place playing just, like, street noise.
You could just put your phone close to your head and play noise loudly, play like a New York street scene loudly, and then you'll get the vibe. But apparently these have better noise cancellation, which is good, because the thing, Apple is in a weird place because the AirPods Pro 3 have such like freaking magical ANC that I'm at the point where I'm like, you know what? I don't need to put on the Sonys when I'm on the airplane. Like, in some ways, the AirPods Pro 3 deliver better noise canceling, tiny little earbuds deliver better noise canceling than Sony's big over-ear headphones. And I have the XM5. So that's a pretty modern one. Anyway, this is coming. It's expensive. It's Apple stuff. Give me some credit card point discounts or something. Like, those deals are always good. Let's get back to the bad news, Ben.
Even more bad news. X is being sued by teens who say that Grok made CSAM with their photos. This is stuff that we knew about already because this was happening at the end of last year and the very beginning of this year. I didn't know. I read the press release from the law firm that filed this suit, and they cited a figure from the Center for Countering Digital Hate that estimated that Grok generated approximately 3 million sexualized images in the time that it was active. So from like late December through like early January, I need to look up again like when Grok Spicy Mode was deactivated, but like that's a relatively short amount of time for people to be going that hog wild or wild on their hogs with these images. And so this Center for Digital Hate report also said like there were approximately 23,000 images depicting apparent children.
Every time we say XAI, we have to say Elon Musk's XAI. Like, just this is it. This, he owns this. We've talked about this. Elon Musk, who is a Nazi, his legacy should also be, you know, for everything bad, he's terrible, he's done to the U.S. government, the bigotry he's spewing online, also creating this CSAM generating machine that he did not really acknowledge or turn off as quickly as he could. So, yeah.
In the YouTube chat, Deepro9 says this is what happens when your training data is 4chan.
Sure.
Yes.
And your major user base is... are 4chan users too, practically.
Like, there are a bunch of testimonies from people who are affected by this. And, you know, there is one statement from the mother of Jane Doe 2, because all of these people are minors. You are not going to find actual government names in this lawsuit, saying that it's just really depressing what's happened to her daughter. Like, she was a teenager, just posting like anybody has for as long as social media has existed. But the statement goes on to say that her excitement about everything she'd experienced in her senior year of high school is just tainted by the fact that she feels like she can't have photographic evidence of this, and especially can't post photographic evidence of this. Because, I mean, she would want to celebrate the moment, all of these really important milestone moments, like with her friends online. But you can't do that when somebody online that you might not even know, this person might not even be in their community. They just see someone and they're like, I want to make something nasty out of this.
This is
tremendously
all,
depressing.
This is all genuinely terrible. I hope this family likes use XAI and Musk for all they're worth, but also a reminder, like, this is happening also in part because we have such shitty data privacy laws in the US, and these companies feel free to do these things. These features don't typically launch in Europe. They don't launch in markets where they know they will get in immediate trouble. So I don't know. This is the thing we keep talking about. Let's get back to less awful gadget news.
Let's talk about gadgets again.
Swing back over there. Samsung is ending its Galaxy Z tri-fold sales 3 months after the launch. Remember that that thing cost $2,899, nearly $3,000. It sold out in minutes with each restock, but rising component costs made it unprofitable to keep producing. There are also like a couple sources and newspapers saying like Samsung never intended for this to be like a mass market product. They always intended for it to be like limited sales, just to like be a halo thing to show like, hey, we did this and not to sell it. I don't believe we got a review unit. I think we had some limited time with it. They didn't send out review units to media. I was skeptical of this thing from the start. Like, this is clearly a showpiece, not a device really meant for use. And this is kind of what happened. So I'm not too surprised here. This isn't a sign that this thing has failed. It's just that it was never meant to be a true success, because I think even Samsung could see how ridiculous it is to spend $3,000 on a phone. And also, not everybody needs a freaking trifold phone. Like, that's basically it. To Nintendo. Nintendo has announced or released a Switch 2 software update that adds handheld boost mode to your old games. That makes most Switch games playable in 1080p in handheld mode, basically because the Switch 2 is a much faster machine than the Switch 1. Many people don't know this, but the Switch 1 made games run slower and worse when you were playing in handheld. And when you docked it, you get a bit of a boost. I believe that was true for Breath of the Wild and some of the most demanding games on the Switch 1. So I've not tested this out myself, but this is a nice little treat, isn't it? Does this make any difference to you, Ben?
I went and looked on some games earlier today, and I wasn't able to see much of a difference, but I just think that it's a neat little software engineering trick that you can just say, hey, old games, run as if you were docked. I promise you, this new platform that you're playing on can handle it.
We're good. Although the difference is between 720p and 1080p, and even at that display size, it's kind of tough to see that difference unless you're very eagle-eyed. But it's a cool thing to do because they know they have the overhead to do that with graphics. So that's fun. That's a nice story to end this section on amid all the horrors in the world. Moving on to what's going on around in Gadget, I just want to share that Steve Dent has reviewed Apple Studio Display XDR. This is their $3,299 5K monitor, and it's 27 inches. I think that's the main thing. Like, Steve loves this thing, but he's also like, it should be cheaper. It should be a little bigger, because this is essentially replacing the 32-inch 6K Pro XDR screen that it was like over $5,000 that came out several years ago. So this is a very nice screen. I've seen it in person, and Steve is our like image guy.
27 inches and 5K. The pixel density must be insane.
This one's $32.99. But yes, the pixel density is insane. It looks ridiculous. It looks incredibly bright, but I'm also, I'm so spoiled by screens, like big screens. We want big screens on our desks. I have a 32-inch 4K, the Alienware OLED thing in front of me, and like this is the bare minimum. You know, I used to be all ultra wide all the time, but I actually find the having little more vertical space is useful. 32 guys, 32 inches to 40 inches is like a great sweet spot for most desks. I do not adhere to the 49-inch ultra wide thing. That's it's too much. Sam Rutherford also reviewed the Dell XPS 16. He really liked it, just like I liked the XPS 14. And he also found issues with the keyboard. He didn't have as many issues with the keyboard as I did, but I can't in good conscience recommend the XPS 14 to people until they fix that keyboard. Check out Sam's review. It's called Return of the King. Both Sam and I are totally aligned with, you know, the XPS brand coming back. That's a good thing for Dell. It is good to see the hardware out there. I don't know what happened to that keyboard. Dell knows how to make keyboards. They've been doing it forever. Anyway, quick listener email. Ash asks, hi, I've moved to Linux PC and now I'm looking to replace my iPhone 10 and my 10-year-old iPad to something more current. I'm at a crossroads where I can leave Apple completely or just continue with Apple and look for workarounds or go Android. Also looking for an iPad replacement as well, but it has to be under $1,000. Any recommendations? This is a really interesting thing. I'm hearing more people moving towards Linux desktops and laptops, especially as they, not really moving away from Apple, but certainly moving away from Windows. I'm hearing that quite a bit. I will say you can totally continue to stay in iOS and use Android, or use Linux with iOS, but you won't get like the great benefits you do if you're using macOS, like all that great integration. So you could also go Android and just save a lot of money, and certainly your phones would be cheaper. You've got like a sea of options for Android, right? So I think if you're a tinkerer, you may want to see if you can get your hands on the OnePlus devices, because people really like those as a combination of like decent power, decent capabilities. Samsung's flagships are like the iPhone equivalent. The Pixel phones are always good too. So you've got a lot of options. Do you want to do AI stuff? Do you care about camera stuff? That's kind of where you have to make the choice there. The Android tablet question is a good one, because there really aren't that many great Android tablets. When Sherlyn was doing the show with us, like, we kept talking about this. Google just never
moved. I have been talking about this just because I literally want to have a tablet that is outside the Apple ecosystem.
I mean, you could totally do it, but it has to be a cheap-ass tablet, right? There's no, yeah, like, this is a great iPad-equivalent thing. Samsung's Galaxy Tab S series is very good. We recommend the S9 in our tablet guide. The S10 is also out, but also it's still an Android tablet. The apps don't look good. Like, Android is not optimized for large screens, no matter how much Google pretends they are trying to do that. So I do not recommend spending over $500 on an Android tablet. I did see that Samsung released this thing called the S10 Lite, last year, and it is currently $283 on Amazon or on Walmart. And it retails for typically around $350. So this is a 11-inch screen, 90 hertz. It's a basic LCD, but you want to play around with an Android tablet? A $300 tablet? That's fine. That can browse the web. That can do stuff. I would totally recommend this. I do not recommend Amazon's Fire devices, because those are literally cheap hardware. They're there to sell ads for Amazon. They're just not very good. Even their faster Fire tablets. So if you want to be a tinkerer, you want to do fun stuff with your tablet, look at something like the Samsung Galaxy Tab S10 Lite. $283 on Amazon. That's pretty good for a tablet. And yeah, in terms of what I'm working on, just go check out my MacBook Pro M5 Max review. The 16-inch version went up this week. That's pretty good. Ben, I've been talking for a while. Any pop culture picks you have for us this week?
I don't think I've talked about Ball Pit. I think other people have talked about Ball Pit.
Yep.
Ball yep. X-Pit.
Ball X-Pit.
I enjoy Ball X-Pit. I think this is the second of two really good games that I've heard about by Engadget's Nate Ingram.
Yeah, Nate loves the addictive games, yeah.
First one was Vampire Survivors, and I think that he was just kind of like mining that same vein. I mean, in general, like indie games have been mining that same vein for a while. I really like playing Brick Breaker games. And especially like the, you know, you send a snake of long ball or a long snake of, whoops, you send a long snake of balls out to break the bricks and, you know, you can get up to hundreds and hundreds of balls being sent out at the same time. This cool. is kind of similar.
It's very pinball again, too. Like it's yes. very pinball mechanics here. Yeah.
It feels pinball-y. It feels, yes, a bit like Vampire Survivors in yeah. the sense that, like, you upgrade balls and you get, like passives that make your combinations more effective. You can combine some powers and make them into, like, various different things. If you've played Vampire Survivors, you know what I'm talking about. Like, eventually you combine items to make more powerful items. I find this game really relaxing, and it's something that I've been doing before going to bed every night.
It's very chill.
For the last,
although,
like, yeah. month or so, it's just stimulating enough to, you know, make me quiet my brain down a little bit.
You mean this hyperactive so... game with the lights and graphics?
Okay,
and
it's not it's very hyperactive, though.
It is so... Maybe you're not hardcore enough yet, Ben, but this is a game that escalates. It escalates so quickly.
Yeah.
Brains are different. Everybody's brains are different. Yeah.
I have gotten Holy Laser and combined it with a bunch of things that make it go crazy. But like it's not what I mean is that it's not as demanding as something like Hades, where you're like dashing around and sure. like fights get pretty intense, especially like boss fights. It's like all you're doing is directing this line of balls wherever you mm-hmm. want and, you know, watching things get broken down.
It depends on the character you choose. Yeah, because some characters, you got to do some thinking. You got to do some planning.
Yeah.
The folks who launch from the back, I don't. Too much thinking. Too much thinking to use that guy. But hey, Ball Pit. Good pick, Ben. I've been playing.
It's recently come out for mobile. I thought initially that this was maybe a mobile game that had scaled up to being on like the Switch, but no, it's the other way around.
Yep.
Like pretty much exactly like Vampire Survivors. I think that started as a Steam game. And so whenever I saw, you know, Kenny Sun and his development studio is releasing Ball Pit on mobile, I'm like, oh, okay, so you can just retitle this story as Kenny Sun to Become a Millionaire by the end of the month.
I mean, like, probably already from the sales of Ball Pit, but who knows? Who knows how that works? You know what you don't need for Ball Pit? DLSS 5. We don't need DLSS 5 for this game. And that is because all we need is you need to move a character around and things go boom. And we have visceral, fun game responses. I love Ball Pit.
You don't need to think about it too much.
Yeah.
I think that it's a good thing for falling asleep. It doesn't matter all that much if you lose too. So if you're kind of only half playing it, this is a perfect second screen activity. And I'm not usually the sort of person who likes to do second screen sort of things, but like I've been playing Ball Pit and listening to Pablo Torre Finds Out, and it has been just a wonderful experience. It feels so good on my brain.
Also, games like this plus podcasts, great, great, great stuff. It just feels good. I want to quickly shout out. I just saw last night Project Hail Mary, the Ryan Gosling movie, the adaptation of the Andy Weir book, and I am happy to say it is tremendous. The movie is phenomenal. I had high hopes because, first of all, directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, these guys have never made a bad movie. They are the producers behind the Spider-Verse films, but also they did the 21 Jump Street reboot, which, against all odds, was incredible. They did the Lego movies, incredible. Creators of Clone High, love that series so much. freaking geniuses over here. And Drew Goddard, a Buffyverse writer, a Whedonverse writer who adapted The Martian. He's a big reason The Martian movie is so good. He is back here writing the script, and this movie's funny. It's joyous. It's adventurous. It also is like very much, it is very helpful in a way that maybe feels necessary right now as it seems like the world is falling apart. This movie rules. It is fantastic. And it's also, it's 2.5 hours long. And for pretty much two of those movies, it's just Ryan Gosling. It's Ryan Gosling and not a big spoiler because this is in the marketing, but Ryan Gosling and a little rock alien friend. And that's it. What a testament to the power of Ryan Gosling too. Like a character, an actor who can be funny, but also can really just hold his own and hold our attention for so long. Always love the guy. Check out, what was it? Stuntman? The one from a couple of years ago? Fall Guy. Criminally underwatched action movie, but I loved Fall Guy. So if you love the Goss, if you like Andy Weir's stuff, this is tremendous. See it on the biggest screen you can because there's some really nice IMAX framing around this too. Great space imagery, some really dramatic scenes. I love seeing space films on the big ass IMAX aspect ratio. Highly recommend it. See Project Hail Mary. It is coming. It's coming this weekend. Comes out March 20th. So check that out.
That's it for the episode. Thanks, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Ellman. You can find Devendra online at...
at Devendra on Blue Sky, and I talk about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
Send me your recommendations for games that adhere to I want shorter games with worse graphics, and I'm not kidding, to HeyBellman on Blue Sky. You can email us at podcast@engadget.com, especially if you want more tech advice. We love doing listener mail. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.
Thanks, folks. We're out.